I'm Clyde Lewis. You're about to listen to a sample of today's Ground Zero show. I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. The numbers to call tonight, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. You'll be listening online at aftermath.fm. It's a free streaming service. Also, talkstreamlive.com, another free streaming service. So they can get us all over the web and get us at our regular time, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time. The reason why we do this is because with all the emergencies and all the other crazy stuff, the debates and politics, I always want to hear the show in its entirety. If you want to break away and have a break from it all, that's what we try to do. Talk about some things that are off the beaten path, some strange stuff, some crazy stuff. Tonight's no exception. Really. So over the weekend, Janine went out of town to go visit a friend. And whenever she's out of town, I just don't know what to do with myself. So I just sit around and, you know, watch movies, catch up on TV shows. And over the weekend, I decided to watch a few B-movies because of the show we did on Friday. I watched 20 Million Miles to Earth again because Liam wanted to watch it. Liam was grabbing something out of the fridge when he stopped and watched some of the movie with me. He was really into the stop-motion animation of the Emir. I think that's really cool. Next to Godzilla, the Emir is my second favorite monster creation. Of course, Ray Harryhausen is the guy that created that. I was a roommate with a guy who dated his daughter, actually. And so when he was in town, I was given the chance to speak to him and meet him. It was awesome because I got to meet him, and I got to meet Forrest J. Ackerman, famous Monsters of Filmland. And, you know, with them, you know, it just, the sky was the limit. I met Carl Striken, the guy who played Lurch in Adam's Family. He was awesome. A guy that played Cousin It. Just a number of people that, you know, in my days of B-horror, I had a good time meeting some of these people, having fun. Liam was interested in the film. He was watching it, enjoying it, and then he, of course, had to go back to his video game. He didn't want to watch it for too long because it seemed old, of course. You know, but even for me, you know, that's an old movie. You know, it really is. I mean, from the 1950s, of course. Well, when the film was over, this is what was really weird. You know, I don't know if you watch enough TV to know, because lately with COVID, I've just become a couch potato. I'm dieting again because, you know, I'm not as active. And so I figured, you know, if I diet, I'll probably lose another couple pounds and then I'll be able to get out and get active again. Hopefully just walk outside and walk back into the house, whatever I need to do. But anyway, so I was watching TV, and after the film, you know, 20 Million Miles to Earth was over, it gave me some suggestions of other films I could watch. And one of them was The Blob with Steve McQueen. Now, as, I don't know, I guess The Blob for me, I thought was probably my least favorite sci-fi film from the 50s. I thought it was a silly film, really. After all, it was later parodied in the film Killer Clowns from Outer Space, one of my favorite cult films, which I thought was interesting. And so I once spoke at a, I don't know where it was, I spoke somewhere where there was a guy who published a magazine called Deep Red. And it was a fanzine, of course, really well done. I was very, jealous of his work. In fact, I told my publishers when I did my fanzine that I'd like to look more like Deep Red. And there's some people that still believe in the art of fanzines, and I just love, you know, fanzines. If somebody has a fanzine that they put together of B-horror films or sci-fi films or even comic books, I'd love to see it because I published my own, and I made money at it, you know, a little money at it. Actually, we'd have, like, beer nights where we'd all get together and staple them together at a place called the Burt's Tiki Lounge in Salt Lake City. We used to go to Burt's Tiki, and It was fun because we'd give everybody beer and then they'd staple our magazine B-Lame together. We called it B-Lame, the lame B-movies that we loved. And I believe Brad Nelson was my publisher and I worked with a few other people on it. It was really well done. We had a good time. And so I was supposed to be, you know, I spoke at some gathering for that, talking about fanzines and how to make them. Somebody asked me if I would write a guest column for Deep Red, this fanzine. And they asked me to do a comparison with The Blob and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And so at that time, I learned to my surprise, because I was, of course, you know, you do research on things and you learn something. So as I was doing research for The Blob, I practically have the trailer memorized, you know. It came from outer space. it's such a classic, you know, trailer. It says two teenagers saw it first as it fell from the skies, and then something that, starring Steve McQueen and a cast of exciting other people. And I'm like, well, what the hell is that? Did they have a list? I mean, and the woman who played Helen Crump on the Andy Griffith Show, I think she's Steve McQueen's love interest in that, if I remember. Because I was, you know, I got as much Blob as I wanted to get so I could make comparisons to The Blob and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And so, yes, I have that movie practically memorized by heart because of this, the research that I did. And one of the things I don't think people get, and this is where I changed my mind about The Blob, and I really grew fond of it after watching it a lot and studying it and reading about it. Did you know The Blob was based on a true story? Yeah, it was based on a true story. I did not know that it was based on a true story until, you know, there was an article that was published in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It had the headline, Flying Saucer Just Dissolves. And I'm looking at the article right now. Ron actually posted it. It says here, four South Philadelphia police officers had a new explanation last night for what happens to those flying saucers people are always seeing. They dissolve. That's what happened last night to the airborne object just seen about 10 p.m. by patrolmen John Collins and Joseph Keenan. The two officers said they were patrolling a red car on Vera Boulevard near 26th Street. When through the windshield, they saw what appeared to be a parachute drifting slowly down from the upper air ahead of them. When first seen, the thing was at a treetop level, they said, and it appeared to be about 6 feet in diameter. It settled in an open field near 26th Street. After summoning Street Sergeant Joseph Cook and Patrolman James Casper, his driver said they went to the field to investigate. The four officers stood a few feet from the object, they said, and turned their flashlights on it. It on the glow, almost a mist that looked as though it contained crystals. Collins stepped forward and tried to pick up a thing up. Part of the mass on which it laid his hands on dissolved, leaving nothing behind but a sticky, odorless, gooey residue. Within 25 minutes, as they stood and watched, the entire substance had evaporated. It was so light, they said, that it did not even bend. It didn't bend the weeds in which it lighted. Sergeant Cook notified the FBI a little sheepishly, since he pointed out that he'd have nothing whatever to do or to show them when they arrived except a magic circle on the ground where something purple and quite evanescent once had been. So there you go. There's another one that was published in Fate magazine in July of 1954. Says here, in October of 1950, during a period as the yet unexplained lavender sun, a purple glow, 6-foot globe settled lightly onto a field in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, scarcely bending the grass with its weight. One policeman who observed its fall from the sky touched it with his finger, whereupon the weird object commenced to dematerialize. Within an hour or so, it was a shapeless, gelatinous mass. The Federal Bureau of Investigation was called in, but their conclusion, or lack of conclusion, was not released to the public. Whatever these strange aerial objects are, and wherever their origin may be, they certainly merit the objective attention and study of men of science, whether stationed in universities or in the Air Force's Project Saucer. They are definitely not hallucinations, misinterpretations of conventional aircraft, or mass hysteria or mirages. So you have the Philadelphia Inquirer saying flying saucers just dissolve, and then some strange meat. So, yes, this was a true story. Apparently, got October, September 1950. Two officers, John Collins, Joe Keenan, swore that they had watched this mysterious object fall from the sky, and they radioed what they were going to travel out to the landing site, and when they arrived, they stumbled upon this purple jelly mass at the crash site. So, I mean, 7 years later, of course, Jack Harris, the guy who produced The Blob, was looking to make a creature feature, but he couldn't come up with a decent premise. So he asked his friend Irvine H. Milgate to try and come up with something that would scare teenagers at the drive-in. So Harris told him that it had to be a monster movie. He He wanted to be filmed in color instead of black and white, and it has to be a cheapy, creepy film. He wanted it to have substance, characters that you can believe in. It had to have some substance to it. He said it's got to have characters and a unique monster. It has to be a monster that's never been attempted before. And the method of killing the monster would have to be something that grandma could cook up on her stove. So Milgate remembered the Philly incident and decided to write about the Philly incident and make the Blob the protagonist in this thing. The film was going to be called The Night of the Creeping Dread. The Glob that Girdled the Globe was also considered. Someone suggested The Molten Meteor. And by the time Harris suggested The Blob, well, shooting was underway already, so the script never refers to the gelatinous monster as The Blob. Instead, it's just called The Mass. So that's how, if you want to know about the history of the movie The Blob, that's how it was made, based on a true story of a couple cops that saw a UFO land in a field in Philadelphia back in the 1950s. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. I'm Clyde Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero, and we'll be back. I'm Clyde Lewis, and you've just listened to a segment of Ground Zero. In order to access the complete archive shows and podcasts, you must sign up on our secured server at aftermath.media. It's only $4.99 a month for the archive shows and podcasts. Or if you want access to the Ground Zero online library, which includes videos, audio clips, ebooks, documents, a social media platform, plus the archive shows and podcasts, it's $9.99 a month. Again, that's aftermath.media. That's aftermath.media. Thanks for supporting Ground Zero.